2 weeks ago, we considered Daniel chapter 2. Welcome, Brother Mac and Sister Sylvia. We concluded that when Christ returns as the stone, that he will reduce the world authorities in two different ways. One being political authorities, and Brother Ben, I think he just arrived too. Political and military authorities would be the one group that he would reduce to a point of control, and the religious authorities in the earth. So first of all, the Gogian host, or the northern invader that is described with his allies from Ezekiel 38, will be defeated upon the mountains of Israel, as we are told in Ezekiel 39 and verse 4. And secondly, the center of false doctrine, spiritual Babylon, will be destroyed. And that's where we sort of left Daniel 2 last week. Well, 2 weeks ago. So let's turn to Revelation chapter 18. And we read this a couple of weeks ago. We'd just like to tie this in with Daniel chapter 3 so we can get continuity. And after these things, in Revelation 18:1, I saw another angel come down from heaven having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, is become the habitation of devils, the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. So that is spiritual Babylon. And then in verses 8 and 9 of that same chapter, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. So there in verses 8 and 9 and 2, we have the description of the fate of spiritual Babylon to be burned with fire. And we ask the question, how will that happen? One of the other things we looked at a couple of weeks ago was this verse in Isaiah, chapter 13 and verse 19, where it says, in Babylon the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Now if you read the rest of that chapter, the next three verses, plus this one, we know the context is putting it into King Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. But it is curious that this little phrase, as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, doesn't seem to fit with natural Babylon. But that phrase does seem to fit with what we just read in Revelation, where it says, they shall bewail and they shall see the smoke of her burning. So the burning and the reference to Sodom and Gomorrah would indicate that the two passages could be linked, and that the fire could be caused by volcanic activity. Now I was interested to see a number of brethren get up a couple of weeks ago and help me out and tell me that obviously spiritual Babylon was referring to Rome. Of course, I agree with that. I didn't want to push that without hearing from others. And this is curious, that in that area there just happens to be a volcano called Mount Vesuvius, located about 120 miles away from Rome. And perhaps the next time it erupts will be when the center of spiritual Babylon is destroyed as outlined in these chapters. And it is noted on that overhead the number of times that Mount Vesuvius has erupted, and it seems to be more or less every 30 to 50 years or so. So it could happen again very shortly. Now, let's get on with Daniel chapter 3. We did chapter 2 last time. And Daniel chapter 3 and verse 1, we learn about this image that Nebuchadnezzar built. And Nebuchadnezzar, at the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 80 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. Now, we don't know when it was built. Some suggest that it was in 587 B.C. when Nebuchadnezzar had succeeded in securing all of his borders. Some believe that it may have been around 600 B.C. after Nebuchadnezzar had been into Egypt and tried to take Egypt. And while he was there, he saw all of these very large statues in Egypt. He was there. He was in Egypt in 601, and in 600 he may very well have built this statue, which probably didn't look like that, but it was a statue of gold in some form. And it seems most logical that it was around 600 B.C. Now, why was it built? Why was the 90-foot-high statue of gold built just outside the wall? That's what the word Jura there. On the plain of Jura, the Jura word there is a wall. And it would seem that the image was built just to the southeast of the wall that was around Babylon. Well, the answer seems to be that he wanted to frustrate what happened in Daniel chapter 2, where in the dream that Daniel interpreted for him in verses 39 to 45 of Daniel 2, he told him, "After thee, Nebuchadnezzar, shall arise another kingdom, and then a third, and then a fourth." And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want that. He didn't want that to happen at all. So by making this image of gold, which represented Babylon, and it was all gold, with no other metals in it, then in his mind, if the whole world was bowing down to that image of gold, it would be a good way to secure the future and make his empire last forever. So that was his object, it would appear. Now, in verses 2 and 3 of this chapter 3, all the heads of all the levels of government, all the civil service of the day, are required to attend. And Brother Clyde read all of those names for us several times, it seems. And they were required to attend the dedication of the image. Now, why would they have to attend, all the heads of all the various levels of government? Because these were the people who would enforce the law, just like civil service people today enforce the regulations that the government makes. And they would be enforcing this new regulation. And they were all in charge of all the offices throughout King Nebuchadnezzar's empire, and they would make sure that all the people would be worshiping this image at the right time. In verse 2, as we read, there were princes who we could call private counselors. They were governors who are described as lieutenants and viceroys by the people that can understand the Aramaic. And there were captains in verse 2, and these were in charge of newly defeated provinces. That's who the captains were. And then in verse 3, we have the judges who were assistant lawmakers, the treasurers. Treasurers always do the same thing. They, whether it's this age or other ages, it seems, they were in charge of the mint. Counselors, the supreme court interpreters of the law. That's who the counselors were. Sheriffs, They had a little different job to what sheriffs have today. They were civil magistrates, rulers of provinces. They were state and civil officers. And if you look back in chapter 2 for a moment, you'll see that the three friends were made to set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So they may have been called the state or civil officers. Counselors is another set of counselors in verse 27, a different word in the original, who were nobles. And then the 10th level of government that would be attending the dedication of this image would be named in chapter 4 and verse 36, where they were called lords, who were people who had been appointed to govern. So all of these department heads were ready and willing to do their duty, and they stood before the image. Now in verses 4 to 7 of this chapter, the decree is proclaimed. And in verse 4, we are told, then a herald cried. There was no television, there was no radio, there were no newspapers like we know them, and there was no internet. And the question is, how did they get the message out? Well, an herald cried aloud, and everywhere there'd be these heralds crying aloud. One beloved brother sent me a birthday card once to dear brother Harold, spelt exactly like that. And so apparently Harold got the news out. And so it was a very, very elaborate town crier system, the old town crier. Probably we think of the American town criers ringing a bell and then shouting out the news. And throughout the Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar, that is what would be happening. In verse 5, we on your handout there, you'll notice there are six instruments named, and we've suggested what they were in a translated form. But the important thing is that there were six instruments, and the significance is in the number six, because that is the number of flesh. The fleshly thinking of Nebuchadnezzar, who was trying to avoid what the future held for him. Looking at Daniel chapter 3 and verse 6, whosoever or whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Now in the light of Exodus chapter 20 verses 4 and 5, which outlines the law given to Moses about these things, it says there, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. And then in chapter 20, verse 5, thou shalt not bow down to them. So our three Jewish friends obviously would have a great problem because they were trying to keep the law as well as survive in this Babylon. And they were part of the government as well, as we pointed out. They were top civil servants who would have to enforce the bow-down law. That was their dilemma. They could not keep God's law and also keep the king's law. And during the last 150 years, Christadelphians have had the same problem sometimes. They've had to make decisions. Which law are they going to keep? And there are certain laws that we cannot keep due to a conscientious objection to certain things, such as going to war, for one thing, and other things as well. So it's an age-old problem, trying to keep God's law as well as the law of the land. We must keep the law of the land unless it conflicts with the law of God. And that word hour in verse 6, the word hour, that's the first time in Scripture that it's mentioned, because the Babylonians were the ones that divided the day into hours, and they used the sundial. They invented the sundial and marked it off into periods of time. The fiery furnace of verse 6, it was a common form of worship in Babylon. They worshipped the fire god. And the method of worshiping the fire god was to make sacrifice of human beings to it. And Jeremiah knew this, and he prophesied about two false prophets, two lying prophets, in Jeremiah 29 and verse 22. And he speaks there of Zedekiah and Ahab, and he says that Zedekiah and Ahab would meet that fate of being burned in the fire, and they would then become a saying that, like Zedekiah and Ahab, whom the king of Babylon roasted in the fire. So it was quite a common way of dealing with the unwanted and also worshiping the fire god. In verses 8 to 12, we have the Chaldeans accusing the Jews. Look at verse 8. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. Now, Chaldeans, we've mentioned before, were the top clergy. They were the scientific community of the day, and they were accusing the three friends of breaking the law. And why did they do that? Well, this seems to be a place where we have a case of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitic people. Jews were holding down jobs that belonged to the Babylonians. Chapter 2, verse 49. Jews who were over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So they accused them. And the word just doesn't mean they made an accusation. They were actually, the word is a very strong word. It means to devour by slander. They were really gnashing upon them. Of course, the memory of these Chaldeans was very short, because if it was in the year 600, it was only 4 years since Daniel. In Daniel chapter 2 and verse 24, Daniel had gone before an official of Nebuchadnezzar and said, "Destroy not the wise men of Babylon." He'd actually pleaded for their lives, these same Chaldeans. So their memory was very short. Now in chapter 3 and verse 12, they accuse the Jews of doing three things to offend the king. Verse 12, they have not regarded thee. They have absolutely no gratitude for the nice jobs that you've given them. Or they serve not thy gods. They won't even serve one of the Babylonian gods. And you know, back in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 47, Nebuchadnezzar, your majesty, they might have said, you honored their god. You called him a god of gods and a lord of kings. And you would think that they would return the favor and at least honor some of your gods. So you can imagine the conversation that was going on. And then the third thing that they accused the Jews of, they would not worship the golden image, and that seemed to be the last straw, and they got Nebuchadnezzar all worked up into a rage. In verses 13 to 18, we have this Nebuchadnezzar. Actually, this picture here might very well be a likeness of Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't have cameras in those days, but they had what they called cameos. And that would be a type of stone that was carved. And this particular cameo was Nebuchadnezzar's cameo. It was cut by his order, and it has an inscription around it. And that is the inscription around it, which translated says, "In honor of Merodach," who was a god, of course, a god of the Babylonians, "Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in his lifetime had this made." So it was made by Nebuchadnezzar, or at least he had it made, to honor this god. And it is today in the Berlin Museum. So if this is a good likeness of Nebuchadnezzar, he looked like a fairly tough chap, didn't he? And one wouldn't want to get him too angry too often. And he, you know, back in chapter 2, He said, go and kill those wise men. He ordered his chief executioner to do that. And I'm sure if he had said this time when the three friends were being accused, go and kill those three ungrateful wretches. He didn't say that. And he said, bring them here. That's what he said. Bring them. And I'm sure the Chaldeans would have loved to have gone and killed them. But he said in verse 13, in a rage, commanded them to bring the three friends. And you know, that probably is the hand of God, again, working in their lives, giving them the opportunity to testify for the truth. And in verse 14, he asked them questions. Is it true? Is it true that you won't do what you're supposed to do? So the opportunity is given for them to change their mind and to worship the image. And then in verse 15, he tells them what the consequences are for not obeying the law. If you worship not, then your fate is the fiery furnace. And this account of Daniel, by Daniel, is no fairy tale. In fact, it has happened to the three friends. It happened to the three friends, and it's happened over and over again. Now, there is a book edited by William Forbush. I've got a copy of the title page. Fox's Book of Martyrs. He was a man that lived in the years 1517 to 1587. Not that long ago, really. And it's a history of the lives, sufferings, and triumphant deaths of the early Christian and Protestant martyrs. And you may have read it. If you haven't read it, it is recommended reading. At least I recommend you read it, or at least some of it. Especially if you have a doubt as to who the revelation refers to when it talks about Babylon. Now there's a picture here, which is obviously an artist's conception, of a fiery furnace of that age, of the 1500s. You know, William Tyndale died in a similar manner to what these two men here are dying of. He died in 1536, 462 years ago. And his crime? Well, his crime was translating the Bible into English. He was burned at the stake for doing that. Now, in 1555, which would be about 20 years later, these two men died. These men were two bishops, Roman Catholic bishops. They were called Ridley and Latimer. And they were burned at the stake for not upholding the tradition of spiritual Babylon. What were they doing? Well, they were failing to uphold the tradition of spiritual Babylon, which was they were not praying in Latin. They were praying in language that the people could understand. And they should have been praying in Latin if they wanted to keep the tradition. They were actually preaching the gospel message of salvation. They were actually trying to explain to the common everyday person that he had the hope of salvation in Christ by following certain things in his life. They weren't supposed to do that. They were preaching as well against the idea of purgatory, these Roman Catholic bishops. They were preaching against the concept of worshiping images, like we have here in Daniel. They said, You shouldn't be worshiping images. And they were preaching against the immaculacy of Mary, because tradition said that Mary didn't have any other children, things like that, other than Christ. Now, one other thing to read, if you don't find this exciting, is just read your Bible. I've got the King James Version, the Oxford Wide Margin Version, and look at page 3 of that thing. It's actually before the Bible begins. We should sometimes read the what they call the Epistle Dedicatory. And it's to the Most High and Mighty Prince James, by the grace of God, King of Great Britain, France, Ireland, and Defender of the Faith, etc. This book was written, I believe it was, you can correct me, 1611. And it was then presented to King James. And in those two little pages there, there's a lot of stuff. They have very long sentences, and you might get bored reading it all, but picking out a few phrases. King James actually asked that this Bible be written, that there should be one more exact translation of the Holy Scriptures into the English tongue, so that the common people could read it. And then it goes on, and this is in the Bible. It says, so that if on the one side we shall be traduced by popish persons at home or abroad, traduced means to be falsely accused, like the three friends were, we shall be traduced by popish persons at home or abroad, who therefore will malign us because we are poor instruments to make God's holy truth to be yet more and more known unto the people, whom they desire still to keep in ignorance and darkness. So all of these matters are connected. The atrocities that King Nebuchadnezzar was going through and what these people went through, they're all connected. In Revelation chapter 13 and verse 15, before we leave Revelation 13 and verse 15, it talks about the spiritual head of Babylon, or the head of spiritual Babylon, and describes him as the image of the beast in verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. That would be the emperor had power to protect the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And that's what happened to these two bishops. They were not worshiping the image of the beast, and they got killed for it, because they were refused to adopt the policies of spiritual Babylon. Well, let's go on to Daniel chapter 3 and verse 15. Daniel 3 and verse 15, we have a question. The question . Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? And then we have the answer in verses 16 to 18. So Nebuchadnezzar is asking the three friends, who is going to deliver you out of my hands? And they're not careful to answer, they say, in verse 16, because they knew that God was able to deliver us, they said in verse 17. God is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. But if not, in verse 18, if not, what's the if not? They knew that if God decided that they should be sacrificed to demonstrate the faith that they had for him, they knew that if not, if they were not going to be living at this time, that they would be resurrected to life later on. And then we come to chapter 3 and verse 19. Let's look at that verse. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace, one 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. Now why would they need to do that? Why would they need to heat the furnace 7 times more? Well, it's because the fire god needed all the help he could get. He was up against the God of Israel, and Nebuchadnezzar could recognize that he was dealing with a powerful God here, because he remembered what happened in Daniel chapter 2. And that's why he heated it up hotter. But he was also very angry. Now this phrase, 7 times, is an interesting phrase when we come to look at it in the terms of prophecy. We know that Nebuchadnezzar uttered it, but it is something in Daniel that we might want to look at. It's anticipating a time of trouble. This was a time of trouble for the three friends. And 7 times in Daniel can be looked at as a time of trouble that the earth is now experiencing. Let's just read what we have here. 7 times, Daniel 3, verse 19, a time in prophecy is based on a lunar year, which has 360 days. That's a lunar year. Therefore, 7 times would be 7 lunar years, or 2,520 days. Applying Ezekiel 4, verse 6, where the principle of a day for a year is explained, when Ezekiel was laying on his side for so many years, and each day that he laid there was for so many years. The 2,520 days becomes 2,520 years. Also applying Daniel 2 and verse 28, we should read that. It says in Daniel 2:28, be it known, or at least, but there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. So applying that verse as well, where the king is being shown what to expect in the latter days, the last days of this century, this period of 2,520 years started with Nebuchadnezzar's invasion of Judah, which was Daniel chapter 1 and verse 1, which was 606 BC when he started the invasion and ended in 1914. That is 2,520 years between those two dates. And in 1914, which was the beginning of World War I, the furnace of the last days was lit, and it will reach maximum heat just before the return of Jesus Christ. And we all know that in 1914 it was a very important time, because it heralded in the defeat of the Ottoman Turks, and Jerusalem no longer was run by the Turkish Empire. And then the Balfour Declaration came along that Israel should be a land for the Jews in 1917. And then in 1948, we had the State of Israel declared, and we now have Israel in the news every day. So the furnace of the last days was lit back then, and it's getting hotter and hotter, and we feel that the return of Christ is very, very close. And this little phrase, 7 times, helps us to understand all of that. The mighty men. Let's go to Daniel chapter 3 and verse 20. And he commanded, Nebuchadnezzar did, the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. They go into action. And in verse 22, they die in the process. They get killed by the fire. And in verse 23, the three friends fall into the fire. Daniel chapter 3, verses 24 to 25. Let's read verse 24 of Daniel 3. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste, and spake, and said unto his counselors, Did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. They were astonished, or astonished. So we can imagine Nebuchadnezzar there, he was watching everything that was going on at a safe distance. Of course, he wouldn't want to have what happened to his generals, mighty men, happen to him. And I get the picture of him sitting there looking through an iron door with bars on it at the bottom of the furnace level, and being amazed to see four men walking around in that blazing fiery furnace. And he describes one of them as like the Son of God in verse 25. And of course, to Nebuchadnezzar, the Son of God, it could be any one of a number of gods because of the polytheism there in Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar believed it would be one, the son of one of the gods, whichever one. And the word God there we recognize as being the singular for what we call the Mighty One. And Eloah in Hebrew, although this was in the Aramaic, and it refers to a single angel. In fact, in verse 28, as you notice there, in verse 28, the word angel is finally used, where Nebuchadnezzar said, God has sent his angel. And that word angel is malak, meaning messenger. But it's the same thing in terms of who was it. It was an angel of God. And then in verses 26 to 30, we find, well, let's read verse 26. We find that the God of Israel is declared to be supreme. Verse 26, Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. Now, just picture this scene. We've got four individuals walking around in a furnace. And they don't seem to be in any hurry to come out. They seem to be visiting in that furnace. The angel is visiting with the three friends. And Nebuchadnezzar calls them out. Now, these men had Babylonian names. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But they meant something. And when they are translated, they have interesting meanings. And so when Nebuchadnezzar was shouting out these names, he would actually be shouting out the meanings of the names. So it's rather something like this. There would be Nebuchadnezzar saying, Inspiration of the Son, would you come out, please? He who belongs to the goddess Shaker, servant of the shining fire of Nego, and they wouldn't come out. They just stayed there until he said, Ye servants of the Most High God, come forth. And then they came forth. So what had happened there, they had put God into the driver's seat. They weren't coming out when he used these names. But when they used the name of the Most High God, they came out. So the other gods now became subordinate to the God of Israel. The word High God is the word Eli, which means most high or supreme. Now, none of this happened in a dungeon or any other secret place. It was all done out in the open for all the world to see. In fact, in verse 27 of Daniel 3, all the men in high authority were there to see the demonstration of faith that had been taking place. And they'd witnessed these three young men who had, as the New Testament says in Hebrews 11, they had witnessed through faith how they had quenched the violence of fire. And it must have been, again, heralded throughout the kingdom how great the God of Israel was and what had happened when these three men went into the fire and came out alive. Everybody would have known about it. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 28. And Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word." The word was, bow down. They changed it and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. So Nebuchadnezzar pays this tribute to the God of Israel. Then in verse 29, there's a new warning sent out. Not to bow down, but the new warning in verse 29 is, don't cross the God of Israel. Don't do it. Every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their house shall be made a dunghill. So don't cross the God of Israel. Or if you do, you can expect to be cut into pieces. And they did those things, you know. They cut people up into pieces. That was part of their culture. But no doubt this recognition that Nebuchadnezzar made at this time of the God of Israel was a great thing for the other Jews that were in captivity. They must have been very encouraged, because they would then feel at liberty to worship the God of Israel the way that they were supposed to. And they would be encouraged to be faithful to him while they were in the 70 years of captivity. And even after they came out, they would have had this practice going on in their lives in Babylon, so that many did come out, and then they came out, and of course, during the Persian reign, and built the temple in Jerusalem, and eventually the wall. So this would be encouraging to them while they were in captivity, not to become sort of part of the regular run-of-the-mill crowd in Babylon, but to maintain their faith, because Nebuchadnezzar says, don't anybody mess around and talk bad about the God of Israel. In Psalm 76, there is a psalm there which seems to describe this new attitude that Nebuchadnezzar had. Psalm 76, verses 10 to 12. Surely your wrath against men brings you praise, and the survivors of your wrath are restrained. Make vows to the Lord your God and fulfill them. Let all the neighboring lands bring gifts to the one to be feared. He breaks the spirit of rulers. He is feared by the kings of the earth. That seems to describe Nebuchadnezzar and his feeling toward God. His spirit was broken, and God was feared by Nebuchadnezzar at this point. In Daniel chapter 3 and verse 30, promoted. You notice that? Then the king promoted them in the province of Babylon. That word promoted means to be pushed forward, which is logical, pushed forward. Made a little higher in the civil service. That's what happened to them. So here is your encouragement to maintain your faith. If you maintain your faith, in the end, false worship of this age of 1998 will come to naught. It won't go anywhere. And God willing, those who refuse to compromise with their faith will survive to be promoted in the age to come. That's our goal, isn't it? We're hoping to be promoted from the state of mortality to a state of immortality. So this story of Daniel chapter 3 is really your life in type, because it foreshadows your destiny if you can but maintain the faith.